So was that the end of your broadcast career when you left WTMA?
No. What had happened is I had finished this technical school, and at that time, a lot of the DJs were given offers at another radio station in Charleston, which now is in Kalamazoo, at least the call letters are. It was called WQSN. There was an apartment complex just two blocks around the corner, and someone mentioned it to me, and I went down there. I was able to borrow a car, and I said, yeah, this is great. And I realized, I said, wait a minute. I lived here with my mom when I was like 9 years old, and Dad was overseas in the military. So we lived here, so I know this area. Oh, so that's the station there. Oh, I see. Okay, great. And so I ended up working at WQSN starting in right around 1968, right around the end, and worked there for about 5 years.
That was a country station, wasn't it?
Right. It was the music when it first began was what you would really call, I don't like to use the word hillbilly, but basically WQSN had been branded the hillbilly station for the area. And it was up to, at that time, a lot of the TMA jocks who left TMA little by little, including Charlie Lindsay. He was over there with Doug Randall's over there. Believe it or not, Mr. Frank Hunt, he was over there.
Mm-hmm.
David Simmons was over there, of David Simmons Advertising. We basically took this product, and they brought in new music, and they started bringing in jingles. And the funny thing about it is it was owned by a gentleman who lived in New York who was a concert violinist.
Wow.
Here's a concert violinist who owns a country station. And he would come in. His name was Barry Winton. Lovely man. He was like a grandfather to all of us there. And the station was basically, I would say, on a scale of 1 to 10. In the new studios they have as far as all the radio stations, okay, that's digital, that's 10. TMA was maybe a 2. QSN was maybe a 1 because it was located on top of a little river that went out to the Ashley River. So the grounding system for the antennas and stuff like that, like every year or so they had to replace the ground system because the salt water just added up. But the station itself and the music was slowly filtered. We had a music director who basically took some of the music out, left some of it in, added more, took whatever, until finally, it took about 8 months to a year before it was like QSN was a whole new sound with jingles and things of that nature. And then they eventually got some new equipment, so it would sound a little bit better as far as working with all the things, because a lot of listeners don't realize that if you have equipment that you're dealing with that's kind of hard to reach and hard to deal with, the sound you're putting out on the air is not going to be that smooth. It's going to be very interrupted because you're going to be talking and then all of a sudden, then you hear something, as opposed to bringing something behind you slowly and then kill your mic and then let it continue, whether it's a jingle or whether it's an interview, whatever. There were two things at QSN that I remember. Charlie Lindsay had a talk show, and at that time, they were thinking about building a mall, a cover mall, over King Street from Calhoun down to Market. And people would call in and give their opinions on this, that, and the other, and Charlie would talk to them on the air. And there was one time that somebody called and said, Charlie, do you think the downtown council is going to support this mall idea? And without missing a beat, Charlie right on the air, and I was standing in the control room when he said it, because I almost fell over when he said it. He said, well, I don't think the downtown merchants would support the second coming of Christ. And so when he said that, it was like, oh, my. And this was like 69 or 70.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess radio at that particular time was starting to grow, because I think the on-the-air announcers were, I wouldn't really call that adult ideas or adult language. It's just that it was sort of different from just the previous 4, 5, or 6 years.
Sort of shocking, and maybe some people might think that would be sacrilegious.
Right, yeah. But nobody called. I think people called up, and they agreed with it. It's not really what you say. It's how you say it and in what context the idea is that you're trying to put across. That's what I think the reason why that Charlie didn't get in trouble with that, but he was giving his opinion, and it was on the air, and it was no problem.
So how long were you at WQSN?
I was there for about 5 years.
Full-time, I guess?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was there 5 years. In fact, the first 3 years I was there, the only transportation I had was Mutt and Jeff. That's my left foot and my right foot. I walked everywhere I wanted. So I was in pretty good shape for those 3 years. And right around 1971, they gave away a car back then, and it was a brand-new 1971 Ford Pinto.
Ooh.
Do we all remember the Pintos? I think they used to call them the Explodomobiles or whatever. On the weekends, they would say, okay, who gets the car of the weekend? Because what they would do is they would allow certain salesmen and other people to drive the car on the weekend so it wouldn't have to just sit in the lot. And it'd have all the advertising on the side. Big certain you register for this car, yada, yada, yada. Well, at that particular time, I'm working on the air and it's Friday and I've got Saturday and Sunday off. And Doug Randall comes in and he says, all right, Kite, you got the car this weekend? I go, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. You do have a driver's license? Yeah, 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 Doug, I've got a driver's license. Okay, here. Throws the keys to me. And I'm all excited. excited. You know, I've driven a car for about 3 years, and it's really great and whatever. And I get off the air, and I go outside, and I look down. Oh, there's a car, and I get in the car, and I sit down. And then I look around, and I go, oh, my gosh, it's manual transmission. I don't know how to speak manual transmission. So I put it in, and I spent an hour or two, but I learned how to drive the car and within an hour or two. And I fell in love with the car so much that, like, about 2 months later, I went out and bought one. And so in 71, you might say, I retired Mutt and Jeff, and I said, now you guys, you get to push pedals instead of pushing me. There was a gentleman named Jeff Warner who was coming into QSN, and he was making some changes. And one of the first things he said when he came in, he says, we're not going to make any changes, so no one has to get upset about schedules and stuff like that. And, of course, everybody's thinking, yeah, sure. Heard that, been there, done that. Okay. So the first thing he does is to make a schedule where all the jocks now have to work 6 days a week, but for the same time period, same amount of hours, and the same salary. Well, at that time, my folks were not getting any younger, and so I had to do things on Saturday and Sunday for Mom or for Dad or whatever. And so I said, I can't do it, Jeff. I'm sorry. Well, we'll see. This was Monday. Tuesday, I come to work. Jeff, I can't work Saturday and Sunday. I can't. We'll have to, you know, I'll work like an extra hour Monday through Friday. Maybe we can work out something with somebody else to come in. Well, we'll see. Same thing Tuesday. We'll see. Thursday, Friday. Well, I was not there Saturday. I come in Monday. Where were you? And I go, Jeff, we had this conversation. So he said, you're fired. And I went, okay. So basically, I got fired because I was not able to stay there and work those 6 days a week, as far as that's concerned. Got a call from Jim Whitaker, and he said they're in the process of going from easy listening music at CSC to rock.
That's WCSC radio.
WCSC AM, right. And he said, would you like to come over here and talk? And I went over there and talked with him. Yeah. You'll have to work on the air for about 2 weeks here. And I said, yeah, I worked at a radio station in Memphis for about a year playing easy listening music. And it went from easy listening to country. So I said, I'm pretty good at going from one to the other and having people call me up and saying, what is that stuff you're playing on the air? You know, they're expecting to hear Frank Sinatra, and they hear Porter Wagoner, or they hear the Beatles or whatever, or vice versa. And so I was there when a lot of the original WCSC radio guys, they were given the chance. I said, you guys want to stay here? And these guys were like, they're in their 50s and 60s. You want us to play rock music? You're crazy. No, nobody stayed. So he had to hire all new jocks little by little by little. And we played rock music over there for a while. It didn't work. The reason why that CSC rock music didn't work is that WTMA had started probably back in the early 60s and had built this huge following, this great listening, this everything, and nobody could get near the ratings that TMA had back in the 60s and in the 70s, and they decided, well, let's go automation. So they tried automation, and we're sitting there feeding the monkey, you know, putting in tapes and whatever. It was basically sort of like easy listening rock. One of the first problems they had, of course, is either they had the head set up wrong or they sent them the wrong tapes, because they had that karaoke type problem where when you have a stereo recording and one side's out of phase and you mix them, yeah, you hear everything on the left and everything on the right, so it's different.
Cancels out the center channel.
Right. It's gone, and there's somebody in the middle singing down the hallway. That's all you can hear. And after like a week of that, it's like, we're trying to tell these guys, and it's like, okay, we'll do something about it. Well, it took a week, and there were complaints and whatever, but they fixed that, and that didn't do real well either, and they brought in a guy named Robin Ewing as a program director, and he said, I'm going to make certain we're going to get CSC number one in a year. And everybody's during a meeting looks at him like, yeah, right, sure, uh-huh. You know, TMA the number one for 20 years or more. And they said, there was no way this is going to happen. And so he started being very abrasive to a lot of people, which the program director and the general manager didn't care until the salesman started quitting one by one. And when a salesman at a radio station or broadcast system, they start quitting, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. We got to check this out. And so they had a meeting one time on a Monday, and he started explaining, well, I've got this little attention deficit problem. If you're explaining something to me and you get up to a point and I don't quite get it and you keep going, I'm still back here trying to figure out what you just talked about. I'm like, John, let me ask you. You said, and he keeps interrupting, we've got to keep going. And this goes on for 5 or 10 minutes. Well, I need you. You got to be quiet. Well, I need you to tell me. You got to be quiet. And I just back then exploded, took my license off the wall, my third class Element 9 endorsement license, and left. And I was very angry.
What year was this?
This was 75.
So you were at CSC?
From 73 to 75 CSC radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm go visiting my folks, and the phone rings, and it's a guy named Buddy Evans, who was the general manager of WCSC TV. And so he said, I'd like to talk with you about a job. And I went, okay. He said, tomorrow morning at 9? Tomorrow morning at 9. I go over there and talk with him. And what they were looking for is, at that time, there was a gentleman who did what was called the book tape, and the gentleman's name was Charlie Hall. He did the book tape, and he was tired of doing it. He didn't want to do it anymore. Well, we'll get an on-the-air guy to do it.
And what's the book book tape. What actually is that?
It's like the tags on commercials and the things where you hear the station IDs.
So it's like a reel-to-reel tape?
It's a reel.
Go
I'm
in there
sorry, right.
And record all the announcements
all
for the
everything.
Day.
You get your log. It has a readout of all the announcements that are going to be necessary. So if you actually had a DJ with a microphone, those are the things he would read. Well, mm-hmm. you don't have a DJ in TV. And so basically I sit down in a closet and put a tape on a machine, push the record button and sit down, and I would start doing each page one at a time. And I no problem. Is that real good? And I'm like, well, I've been doing stuff like this for 12 years, so sure, yeah, no problem. And so I went from that, and they said, well, how would you like to be a switcher? I went, what? A switcher, you know, pushing buttons for, oh, you mean like for TV? I said, yeah. So I learned from a guy named Jim DeMauro, and Jim taught me how to switch and whatever. He was a switcher, projectionist and whatever. And I did that for a while. And then eventually they said, we need somebody in production. Would you like to switch, go to the production department? And I went, okay, sure. Because that was my number one. I love doing production.
And that would be producing TV commercials?
Right. But you're not doing it by yourself. You're working with a crew of another person, a cameraman, a projectionist, a director, an audio person. Well, what we would do is we would rotate just about all those jobs. They would even, once in a while, the guy who was a director, he would do something else and see if we could find somebody else. And there was only like one or two at Channel 5 back in 75 who could do really good the buttons as far as the video is concerned. Everybody else could do just about everything else. There was a lady named Rainey Evans, who was working at Channel 5 many years ago and been there for many years. Her name was Happy Rain. And there was a problem with scheduling and sales and things where a lot of changes had been made. And she was trying to adapt to those changes the best that she could, and they just weren't giving her enough time. Problem was that she basically had to turn in her resignation. This was right around the end of 75 or so. And so here they are, stuck without someone to do a children's program, and they were committed by the FCC to have so many hours per week or whatever. And they sort of looked at me, and they said, and I had a beard back then. He said, how would you like to do a kid show? And I went, what? So for 42 weeks, I became a character named Super Guy. We came up with a triple knit suit. My goodness, it was hot underneath those lights. The amount of light that was needed back then was like three times as what it's needed now. It was like 80, 90 degrees underneath those lights, and you're wearing a triple knit blue suit, and I had someone, a tailor, make a cape for me. And I wasn't like a super person where I could lift things. I was just a super nice person. Sort of like the idea when Lois Lane found out all the great things that Superman could do, and he flew off, and she would say, gee, what a Superman. Oh, Superman. You know, but I couldn't do that, you know. So basically, it was an interview show with 5-, 6-, 7-year-old kids, and we would play cartoons and things of like that. And I wanted to do things outside the studio, so I would grab the videographer back then. Because back then, E&G was not a camcorder or whatever. It was a 16-millimeter Bolex camera. That was E&G back then. Everything was 16-millimeter film. And I said, let's go to so-and-so. So we set up different things outside the station and filmed me doing different things with firemen and policemen and Coast Guard and inside of a jet airplane and the dog kennels and airport and things of that nature. And we used those in the show to show the kids other things that were going on and how you could learn by going there. And it was real fun. And eventually when Happy Rain went to Channel 2, during this 14-year period when she was at Channel 5, she never went anywhere. But at the same time, maybe she was too busy because this lady had, talk about having irons in the fire. She had to do a lot of moving around to keep everything hot as far as she worked in the sales department. She wrote copy. She visited clients. She was on the air. She did a lot of stuff. She didn't have a staff of secretaries doing her stuff. She was her own secretary. So when it got to the point where she now had a lot more free time over at Channel 2, I don't know whether she had this idea of going out now and doing stuff outside Channel 2 with the kids because of what she saw on Channel 5 or what. I think it was an idea that was like a universal thing, and I was the first to stumble upon it. I didn't invent the wheel, in other words. I found this wheel in the corner of the wall, and I said, hey, guys, I found a wheel. Let's use it on Channel 5. Well, she found the wheel, too. So basically, I did that for a while. And then around 1977, they were cutting back. The Super Guy show ran for about 42 weeks, and then it was gone. The sales department couldn't find anybody to promote it. They couldn't find anybody that was interested in it. And I think at that particular time, television had established an idea that it takes a long time to build something. And they were just starting, well, if it's not popular in 6 months, we're going to kill it. The job at Channel 5 was good until around 77, and they started firing people, and I got on that list. And here I am stuck without a job, whatever. And so I went to the South Carolina Employment Commission and found a media job working for the state in Latson, South Carolina. And I worked there in a department called media for about 14 years. And so I had like 14 years of media experience before I came there and 14 years after, and did that for 28 years. And this went on until about 91, and they had some cutbacks. And that particular time said, we're going to close down the media department because we can't justify your position when we close down media departments all across the state. But we'd like you to go to maintenance. So I went in maintenance for about 8 years. And at that particular period of time, right around the end of 1999, my mom, instead of having some more health problems, she needed more hands-on care. And I had like three things in my life. I had my life, her life, and my job. And it's like, one of those I got to go. Well, you guess which one I had sort of gave up. And so that's basically what I've been doing since 63 to 2000, February of 2000.